Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Prem Anugyan. Anugyan has been working as a body therapist since 1985. For 15 years, Anu worked at the Osho commune in Pune, India. He taught at the Healing Arts Academy and worked as a rebalancer in the USA, Switzerland, Italy, UK, India, Japan and Taiwan. In 2008, together with his wife, he founded the Silence of Touch Rebalancing School, which is a state-approved school for rebalancing bodywork since 2016. Hello, Anugyan. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm really good. Nice to be here. Nice to be invited to a podcast. I'm happy to share.
It's all my pleasure, and likewise, I'm really excited about this conversation, and I'm so looking forward to chatting with you about your journey with Osho and how you integrated that experience in your life and profession. Let's start from the beginning. I'd love to know how you came across Osho at the beginning of your journey.
Well, I came across Osho through my parents who went to Pune in 77 and 78 and became sannyasins. I'd left home, but I would go and visit them. And one day I went to visit them. They were all dressed in maroon with a mala and they had new names. My parents were kind of exceptional people for their time. And so it didn't really surprise me. That was what was surprising because they're always doing unusual things, going against the grain. They were quite rebellious in their way. So that was my first, you could say, introduction to Osho. My father used to do dynamic with, he was a chaplain at Churchill College, Cambridge. Yeah. So he started doing dynamic with the students in the chapel, which created quite an uproar with the dons and the elite of the Cambridge University scene. And he became very popular with the students, many of whom actually went to Pune and took sannyas. So he was quite an influence. And I picked up a book of his that he brought, which was the Mustard Seed, which is on Jesus. And I started reading it, and somehow everything that Osho was saying resonated. It was like, yeah. I think the thing that really got me was, how can somebody have the courage to say all this stuff so forcefully and directly without any fear? That was the thing that really got me, because the things he was saying were quite outrageous and rebellious. And it's like, in my heart, I felt them to be true, but I doubted myself. And here was a man who stood behind it 100%. And that it really impacted me. So I found myself reading it and it was working inside me. And I was in London. How old was I? Maybe 20, 21. Personally, I was in something of a depressive state. I was feeling just bored with life, flat, nothing made sense. Everybody in London was running around in suits, becoming bankers and, professionals and so forth. Inside me was growing this feeling, but I want to live. And I had no idea what that looked like because I couldn't see anything reflecting that quality back in the people. So I find myself in a state of, you could say, despair, like, okay, if this is it, what the fuck kind of thing, you know? And then I remember walking through, I think it was Oxford and the King's Cross station, and I saw this figure walking down the road dressed in maroon with a mala around his neck, and it was like he was dressed in maroon and everything was gray, blue, dark English, yeah? And it cracked me up. I started laughing because it was so absurd. It's like, wow, this is really interesting. I finished up talking to the guy because I figured he'd come from Pune and he had piles. You know, he'd had dysentery and his sister, you know, he had piles and he'd been hemorrhoids and he'd been sitting on the aeroplane for 8 hours or so flying back. The guy was in agony and walking like a cowboy who got off a horse, you know. So I took him home and I stuck him in the bath with some bath salts and we chatted a bit and he told me about the center, which is called Kalptaru in London. So I went over and checked it out and there were all these people there, just full on alive, vibrating, alive, you know. And it was like, wow. And beautiful women. Lots of beautiful women. And that's another thing that got me is like seeing all these beautiful women, beautiful guys too, and actually people who I could actually speak to. And I felt on the same wavelength. I was immensely happy. And it's like, wow, this is incredible. And I would go there to the center and watch videos and so forth. And at that time, London was it was the transit point to get to and from India. They had the cheapest flight. So everybody was returning from Pune to London and, of course, coming to the center. So it was incredibly vital and all the latest gossip and so forth. Yeah. So I was hearing about this amazing guy and all this stuff going on. And, of course, I wanted to be part of it because it was incredible. And when I first heard Osho, he terrified me. Somehow I felt this guy's for real and he scared the shit out of me. And at the same time, my heart was just saying, yes, you know, this is it. I think it took me a couple of years before it really got in. This is it. And then I ran to the center and said, I want to take sannyas and demanded it. I want it now. And they just laughed at me because that was the energy that everybody came with, you know? And then as it grew inside me, you know, the how to live it was that I think the next thing that came. So the first thing I did was I got all my clothes, threw them into a washing machine in the laundrette, poured in some maroon red dye. And I dyed everything that was dyeable, that was light in color until, you know. And then I went to university dressed in maroon, very proud with my mala. And within a week, I lost all my friends. You know, everybody was terrified. I'd become a cult member. At that time, Osho was in the newspaper, the sex guru, and there was a lot of controversial press coverage. He loved controversy. So you were either in love with the guy or you were terrified of him. And this is what I met at university. And within a week, all my friends kind of disappeared. They didn't know what to do with me. And I had found a whole bunch of people who I could actually relate to and talk about life with sincerely. So I lost interest in them also. And I just simply gravitated to a whole new way of living and being. I was at university training to become a teacher. And I think after the first 6 months and some teacher training practice, I realized that the system was not about education. I was in the inner city in London teaching. The kids were emotionally unstable. Many of them had single parents and they would just sit kind of glumly and resigned at the back of the classroom. And it was really hard to get them to move. And when they did, I remember sitting one girl on my knee and asking her to read, and she just burst into tears. It was the first sort of contact and the sense of feeling held that she'd had. And then she told me her story, how she goes home every night, and her mother, who was a single mother living in a high-rise block of flats, would leave £5 on the table for her to go down to the local fish shop to buy herself some fish and chips. And she would go up and down in a lift, ringing everybody's doorbells for some attention. And they all hated her. So that was the environment in which she lived. And there was no joy in her. It was just pain. And she cried and cried. And it just really hit me that the education system is not an education, so it's not dealing with the needs of the people. And you can't learn until your emotional, psychological needs are cared for. That was the impact it had on me. Of course, you read the theory and study the theory of education, you know, and I finished up reading Krishnamurti and Osho, and it was like they were saying something completely different. And it made sense to me. So after the first year, I told him that I would like to take a sabbatical of 1 year. I would like to go and see Osho, and I never went back. That was basically what happened. It was just too good. It was just too alive. I was fascinated. It was all about exploring the inner world. I was gone on it. It was like, yeah, this is it. My heart just said yes. And it was the first time in my life something had resonated that I wanted to be involved with and dedicate my life to. And it was a decision that arose in my heart, and I was terrified, and it didn't matter. It was like, okay, this is it. And end of story. So I became a sannyasin. That's how I came across Osho.
What piqued my curiosity is trying to understand how you dealt initially with that reaction of the people you were hanging around with, all your friends, of all the people at the time that were part of your environment. And when you became a sannyasin and you turn up in orange with the mala, with this guru, and people thought that you were part of a cult, how did you react? Did you engage in conversation with them? Did you feel like, what happened?
I was over the moon. I was ecstatic. I was blissed out, whatever you want to say. I just knew this is where I wanted to go. I have to say that this was my first experience, I could say, of when Osho talks about totality. This was my first experience of totality, when my heart, my mind, everything was saying yes. You know, it's like, okay. I think it's because of this, the challenge of doubt. For me, Osho also, he was a tremendous invitation, a tremendous challenge, because you had to jump over yourself. You had to jump over doubt, fear. You had to encounter, meet these things. And that was out of that. Something would happen, you know. So I think it took me 2 years to arrive at a point, because I went through all this stuff, you know. It took me, I think, 2 years to come to a point where I took sannyas, where I understood that actually this is where I want to go, this is real. So when I went to the university and spoke with people, they asked me what had happened. I was on fire, you know, and they had no chance. And it was Osho's energy. It was that totality, that love, I don't know what you want to call it, that vibrancy, fire was alive in me, and it freaked people out. I mean, it was always a challenge. I remember another experience I had when I was living at Medina, which was a commune there. I was working with a crew of painters, decorators. We had a big construction team, professional construction team. Because we had the labor force, we could be in and out of a job within 2 or 3 days. So we had this capacity to transform a place really quickly. Labor wasn't an issue. It was just everybody just jumped in. We did it. So we got a lot of jobs on Oxford Street and in London, refitting shops, restaurants, and so forth, who needed a fast turnover. They wanted us to be in and out in a weekend and transform the place. It at that time in this is when Oregon was happening. There were a lot of accidents on the ranch, and Osho. So we asked Osho about it, and he said he gave us the gachamis, Buram Sharanam Gachami, to do in the mornings before we started work, and in the evenings when we finished. And the result was a lot of the accidents just went down to zero. You know, really reduced, because there was a relationship you created between your work and you. And the way this happened was that you'd bow down to the vehicle that you were driving or the tools that you were working with, and you know, bow down and work with awareness. So as a driver of the team, I would drive them into London. We'd be on Oxford Street. We were turning over a huge restaurant. So we were in there for 4 or 5 days. And on Saturday afternoon, 5 o'clock, we pack up all the tools and drive back to Medina. And of course, the van was right outside on Oxford Street, right outside the restaurant. So I was a driver, and everybody was giggling and laughing at me because I had to go out there onto the street, get down on my hands and knees and do the kicharmis, you know, which is one of the most absurd things that you can imagine. It's just absurd, you know. So I think for the 45 minutes or so, half an hour before I had to go up there and do it, my heart was racing. My mind was going, Anna, you're just nuts. You're going to be going down on your hands and knees on Oxford Street, man, and it's rush hour full of people, and you're going to do the kicharmis. You're going to look like such a fool. And my mind was racing like this. I was breathing. It's like, okay, Anna, you know, go and do it. So I went out there and you know, got down on my hands and knees on Oxford Street. People were racing backwards and forwards. And I got down and then I just started to put my hands together and just do the kicharmis. You know, I just closed my eyes and started. You know, off I went. And it was incredible. It was just this, my mind just imploded. It just like this, you know. And I was right in this incredible space of stillness and presence. And I did the whole thing, and it was as if there was this sort of wall around me. All I could see was up to the knees on people. So I'd see feet walking towards me very fast. And it was as if they hit a wall. They stopped. They must have been in shock. And then they walked around me, and they were coming from all sides. And I realized there's something there that just protecting me, you know. It was just, I was in another dimension, and it was an incredible experience that stayed with me. And this was the me meeting mind, my mind, the mind, the, you know, the whole mechanism of the mind, the doubt, the fear, that was just pounding me, saying, you know, this is absurd, this is stupid, you can't do this, you're an idiot, you're a cult figure, they're going to hate you, all this stuff. And just starting, it suddenly went poof, and this whole other dimension opened up, and it was a really incredible experience. And it stays with me because when you enter the absurd, the mind just goes quiet. It can't function, and everything just simply stopped, just like that. And it's as if you're transported into another dimension, which is just still and quiet. And just, it was just kind of full of Osho, you know, this space. It was incredible.
That is incredible. Yeah. You know, just for people who don't know, most people would know, of course, but Oxford Street in London is one of the busiest streets in Europe and perhaps in the world. And to imagine at that time a guy dressed in orange, bowing down, and the Gachami prayer, basically you have to be on your knees and kneel down. So it's quite...
So you're invisible. You're invisible to people until they're like right on top of you. I was spattered with paint and sawdust and, you know, construction stuff. I was a mess, you know. It was one of those absurd situations that often Osho talks about. And it does. It just blows your mind. It blows everything.
Okay, I will keep in mind, I have this image of this guy in the middle of Oxford Street. Incredible, beautiful, beautiful. Okay, so now coming closer to the present days and your life and your profession today, in the midst of your teaching career, you left everything, you went to India, and you put that project on hold. And then I understand that at the end of your days with Osho, you trained to become a body therapist. And in 2008, you opened a school together with your wife, the Silence of Touch Rebalancing School, which has been awarded, I think it's been recognized as a rebalancing body work since 2016. It's a state-approved school, which is a big achievement, so congratulations on that. So how did this passion for body therapy develop?
Wow. There was a training, Anna Buddha, there was a bunch of guys who were Anubhuta Satyarthi, Rakesh. There's a bunch of guys who were teaching in Oregon, and they set up a training in Italy, Miasto, just below Miasto, in, was it 85 or 80, 85, I think it was, 84, 85. And I went there with my girlfriend at the time, who had completed a training on the ranch that she was invited to assist. So I went along as a kind of cook buyer. Okay. So I was at the back end of things, taking care of the food, driving into Siena and buying our supplies. One day, one of the participants was sick, so they were short on somebody in the training, and I was invited to come in and lie down and be a model. So I laid down and I got a session, and I loved it. And then, because you have to exchange, I had to turn or get off the table, and then I had to do something to the person who lay down. And this was when I had to dig inside myself and try and replicate what I'd felt in my body with my hands. So that was the beginning of me accessing some expression that was nonverbal, because touch is nonverbal expression. And it was something I'd never experienced before. And it blew me away that I could, with my hands, say things, share love, feel, express in a nonverbal fashion. And that was a real eye-opener for me, because it just really blew me away. Of course, I was looking around the room to see what people were doing and putting that together, my feelings, somehow trying to put something together. And the girl loved it. And Anubhuta came over and said, "Wow, Anu, you have a talent for this. Why don't you come and do a training in Pune?" So I did. When Pune started in 86, I joined in a training there, and I just loved it. It was an incredible exploration of awareness through touch, awareness in the body. And I found myself walking around just inwardly watching my body. It gave me something to watch. And when I would listen to Osho in the discourses talking about watching, it's like, okay, what do I watch? The stars, the trees, you know, for whatever. But but watching the body was something that I could feel, because I'm a body type. So it gave me something solid. It gave me something that I had all the time. So I get into watching my breathing. My felt sense came alive, and suddenly my body came alive as a vehicle in which I'm living. And this blew me away. I'd never seen my body in this way or explored or experienced it like this. So it opened up a door into, it made what Osho was saying accessible to me. Otherwise it was, okay, watching my thoughts. They're going so fast, I can't stop them. You know, it's like, what does it mean? You know, but my body, I could watch it. I could feel, I could move my body and try to move it with awareness. So it became a fascinating playground for me to explore what Osho referred to as watchfulness, witnessing. And then I was invited to give sessions in the ashram. And I would listen to Osho in the evenings and in the mornings also, and then give sessions. And of course, you listen to discourse, and then you come out and you're full of him and the things that he's been saying. And there are things that resonated with me, which stayed. So I would take those into the session, and I'd be giving a session, and the question inside me would be how to touch with awareness. What does it mean to be present in my hands? You know, and these were the sort of questions that were going through me as I was giving sessions. And, you know, they don't make sense. How do you put this together? And that became like the grindstone. When I was giving sessions, these were the things that internally I was pondering and trying to understand. And through the sessions, certain things started to slowly integrate and become obvious. The connection between the physical and the emotional and the psychological. And it just grew. It's something that fascinated me, and it became the starting point for me of being a seeker, being a sannyasin, being with Osho. That was the journey. That was the path that I was walking. Begin with the body, was the name of one of the groups. And it got me thinking, what does it mean to begin with the body? Watching the breath, watching my movement as I walk. And I belong to the healing arts department, so I assisted in many of the groups, of which Vipassana was one of them. And the walking in Vipassana is where I learned a lot about balance, movement, because you watch the movement very slowly, and you can, going so slowly, I could feel how my body moved from one side to the other, the balancing, and, you know, how I balanced. And it just became fascinating for me. It still is.
It's a great reminder for people that if they try meditation and they struggle, as you say, that we all do with the mind, watching the thoughts, it sounds so easy to just close your eyes, watch your breath, watch your thoughts. And we all experience that it's probably the most difficult thing to do in reality. The thoughts are so fast and we get lost. But starting with the body is a great way. It's a great opener. And it's so much more easy. And then it's such a fascinating journey to reconnecting with ourselves. That's why I love Osho meditations, because they involve a lot of body movement and starting with the body. This is very much part of Osho's insight. When it comes to healing, I'm wondering, because the way you're saying this, it's more about you and your journey of self-awareness and self-discovery. How then that progressed into your profession as a healer? What is the healing element into this?
Well, this world, this word healing is a journey. You know, for me, healing is not something, you know, you can cut your arm and then it heals and the body will heal. For me, a deeper sense of healing or being around Osho was incredibly healing on so many levels. It starts with the body, and then there's, God, man, this is a big subject. How I started, okay, I'll just tell you a story. How I started doing, when I left Pune after Osho died, I was in grief for a long time. I was devastated. I think many people were. My whole life was in Pune and it just disappeared and evaporated. All my friends and my family, they all went back, they dispersed and went to their various countries and homes. And I had nowhere to go because I had left England 30 years ago, so I had no connections there. So it sort of threw me into a panic. Where do I belong? To cut a long story short, I met my wife and joined her in Germany. She was pregnant with our first child. So I was doing construction and different varying jobs to make the money to, you know, pay the way. But when my first daughter was born, Zoe, I was so touched and just blown away at this gift from existence. It just blew my heart wide open. And I realized working for survival does not answer this gift from existence. I have to do better than that. And the only thing inside me that I felt would meet that would be to do something that I sincerely loved and really touched me. And that has always been bodywork and the journey. You know, my personal journey, as you said, was with bodywork. And so I realized that I have to start doing sessions again. And that's where it started. So I started doing sessions. Then the urge came, okay, I want to share this. I want to teach. I was trying to recreate that space with which I'd been in Pune. And I started to understand that what I want to do is I want to combine the world and the world of Pune in together. Before that, there had been a separation. I would go to Pune and be with Osho for 6 to 9 months. And then I had to leave and work. So I'd come out, work in the world for 4 or 5 months, but I didn't want to be there. I'd work, I'd get the money, and I'd go back. So there was a division. And I realized that now I wanted to bring these two together. So it was a question of being in the world and making money and bringing that space into my life, creating it in Munich, which is where I'm living. So I just simply started to try and create that. So I created the trainings. My first training was with 4 people, and it was a lot of work. just to keep them moving. And then it grew from there. And as it grew, I learned so many things about it. I had to dig inside myself and really pull out the gems and the understanding of what Osho had been doing with us all these years. So there was this constant question, okay, how did Osho manage? What happened in the commune? How did this happen? And through this, a lot of understanding about how he worked came alive in me. And I started to really appreciate the genius of the meditations he created. As you said, they start with the body and they take you through the mind, emotions, and they leave you in stillness. And it's a relaxed stillness. It's not forced. It's just you lie down and there's this incredible stillness there, which I'd done so many times in Pune, but I never really valued it. I never understood it because I didn't have that contrast, you know? And suddenly I'm in the world where people value money and security and everybody's going fast paced and nobody can stop. And suddenly you get them to stop. And it's like, okay, so this is what he's talking about. So that contrast made me see the impact, the importance, the genius of what he created. For example, with Kundalini, how just the shaking is how the body releases trauma. This was fascinating for me. So many little things I started to understand. And so when I do Kundalini, I have a completely different understanding of the science of it. And that then I just drop into letting whatever it is inside me, those energies that are putting me into shock, the trauma, the fear, panic, all these things, just letting them gently shake out, not doing it to get rid of them, which is what we often do. We do it like sometimes I did it as an exercise, but to do it from another place of just allowing those energies, which meant that I had to really feel the fear. I had to really feel and allow it to be there and not be afraid of it and let it come into my body. And then my body would tremble and maybe tears came. And it was, I could feel that something deep inside was releasing. It wasn't connected. So this, it completely changed my understanding of the meditations that he created, you know?
Absolutely. Yes. Osho is a genius and his contribution is enormous. And I wish that his methods, ideas, more and more will penetrate the world, not just the sannyasins who were with him or people who come across Osho nowadays, but even more actively. And I love that part when you talked about the contrast between being in that space where the energy is so high and then coming back to the world where the focus is completely somewhere else, and then you can appreciate really what you were doing there. Also, this aspect of integrating everything you have learned with the real world, whereas in your previous life, you were in the world to make money just as a very short-term project because your focus, your life, your energy was in India with Osho, in that different type of life, whereas now it sounds like you have integrated those two aspects. And I think this is a very important point. Osho always said, I don't want my sannyasins to hide in the cave. I mean, if someone wants to, it's the choice, but the message is go into the world, bring light back into the world. And that's, I think, is very challenging for many people because people who are spiritually oriented normally are more sensitive. And to be in the world where there is less light, it's a challenge. So how did you go through that? And what would be your advice for younger people who may be pulled to go somewhere where there is more higher frequency, but bearing in mind that the challenge is to stay in the world and share that higher frequency there?
I don't know. One thing I see is that everybody has their own way, their own path. You know, being with Osho was a challenge. He was throwing challenges at us continuously, emotionally, psychologically. I mean, you listen to his discourses, you know, he's saying stuff that's off the wall. He throws stuff at you that just blows your mind. It's like, where is this guy? You know, he was constantly challenged. For me, he was a constant challenge. And as I said right at the beginning, in taking sannyas, I had to meet my judgments, fears, everything. That was what he presented. That's what his energy field presented, he put me up against. It's like my own mind structure. Totality is something that I think is very fundamental. Whatever you do is to go into it totally, even if it's jealousy or greed, and whatever it is, I had to go into it. I had to meet it, because there are always judgments around these things. There's ethics and morality, which is a big part of our lives, which somehow you have to throw out. You have to meet them and see the fallacy of them. Otherwise, you're always contained by moral structures. I can say that now. At the beginning, when I look at my journey, it was just like going into everything like everybody else with a passion. You get burnt, you know. Your girlfriend goes off with another guy. You get really jealous and angry, and I hate you, and that's wrong. A year later, I have a date with another woman, and then her boyfriend is standing in front of me saying, "You fucked my girlfriend." And it's like suddenly I'm on the other side of it. And I started to see that everything is how I judge things. You know, this is right, this is wrong. And then at some point later in my life, I found myself completely on the other side, being judged in the way that I had judged other people. And I realized that actually I was just following my flow. I wasn't coming from a place of trying to hurt somebody. It was just how it happened. And suddenly I could see that these judgments that we have against each other came out of my fear of just letting go, of wanting to possess, so forth, you know? So seeing that, suddenly it made me so much more aware of judging and how we judge. And then it makes it more difficult to do that. You know, when something happens, you can say, okay, this is wrong. And the next minute, I might find myself doing that. And what I'm actually doing when I condemn you for doing it wrong is I'm condemning myself in the future. I find myself in the same place. And it's like, okay, so go into whatever you're doing totally. That's all I can say, is because when you go in totally, these are the things that you see. You see that they're fallacies, the beliefs, the ideas, they're not real. And it's difficult. It's challenging. When I look at this movie that came out recently, Wild Wild Country, when I feel behind the scenes, everything that's happening there is basically being judged in a moral way. There's a moral yardstick behind it. And what fascinated me in that was that Osho went through this whole thing. And you're left still with this question, what went on? And I love that, because that's how he was. He went through all this kind of stuff. You know, he's in prison, poison, big drama. When you read it, it's like a Robert Ludlum novel, you know? And somehow he went through this whole thing and you can't nail him. It's fascinating. That fascinates me. He's just gone through all of this. And you're still left with a question mark. You don't know what happened, you know. You're left questioning, I'm left questioning all this stuff inside me. And I find that so wonderful. It just cracks me up and makes me laugh because of the absurdity of it. And you don't know. And everybody's trying to figure it out. And he went through everything totally. You can say it was right. You can say it was wrong, whatever you want to say. I just find it really interesting that wherever you are, just be total. If you're a thief, be total. If you're a mother, be total. If you're whatever you are, it's that quality of totality is the, I think, the thing that I was left with after all this.
Really nice, nice. I like this idea of totality, of course, and perhaps even more, I love the way you framed Wild Wild Country and with Osho, that essentially you can't nail the man. Osho is a mysterious object. You can't explain him. And it leaves with this big question mark. One of the ways what Osho works on us is trying to confuse our mind, to leave us with this gap, with this uncertainty. And he did it all the way. And it's almost this theater of the absurd. It's absurd from a logical mind point of view. Its rationality is completely destroyed. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really enjoying this conversation, but unfortunately we are heading towards the end. We need to wrap up. I have three final questions, but anything else you want to ask, add anything that I didn't ask, or maybe you have some kind of project you're working on with your school. Is there anything you want to share with us?
No, we continue. I mean, right now with the COVID situation, we're in lockdown. So we had to put the trainings on hold. We're waiting for it to open maybe next month or the month after. What to say? I mean, I love the work. It's growing. I see the need of it more and more. It goes deeper and deeper inside me. It's my personal journey, the work. This is a thing that I've come to realize that it's my personal journey. I thought for the first 10 years that I was helping people. That's when I started. Okay, I can help people. I can straighten up bodies. I think after 15 years of doing this work, I came to understand that actually my involvement with bodywork had changed me. And then it made me aware that actually there was something else going on. And that actually by doing this, being involved in it, it was transforming me. And this is again, this thing of Tati, what I was saying, when we get involved in something that touches our heart, it transforms us. And getting involved with Osho will transform you. You can fight him, you can love him, you can hate him. It doesn't matter. It's not about that. That will be the friction with the personality in mind, but he didn't care. You hated him, you loved him, but it was focused on him. And just that starts a process of transformation. Yeah, I just find him fascinating. It's just incredible. He just blows me away. With the training, I love the work. I work together with my wife. We're here in Munich. Everybody's welcome. Yeah.
Okay, sure. And I'll link your school and your website in the show notes. So anyone interested, they can find you there and get in touch.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got three final questions. The first one is, what is Osho's greatest contribution to the world?
Hallelujah. He lived something, his presence. I mean, he just lived something. And he made us part of it. He lived an experiment which we all participated in. He showed to many of us that it's possible, that there is something else. He basically gave us a glimpse of something. It's hard to answer that question because he's given so much. Just things like the Mystic Rose, which is genius, you know, the Kundalini dynamic, they're incredible. They work. They're quite something. So he's contributed immensely. He's basically turned around a lot of stuff. He challenged the whole system in which we live. He challenged America. Oof, it's hard off the top of my head to answer that because his contribution is just immense. Just his presence has done something to this planet, to human consciousness that I can sense and feel, but I can't describe it. And I think in a few hundred years, perhaps it'll become more obvious, but he started something that needed to be started and it's moving.
Absolutely. And I see it's already moving. It's already happening. I see it or I feel it. So the second question is, what is the most beautiful gift you received from Osho?
The journey into myself. He started me on a journey into myself and he showed me it's possible from his lived example. He showed me it's possible. He's challenged all the doubts in me and shown that it's possible. So I just feel so blessed to have been picked up off the streets of London, and he completely changed the direction of my life completely. And he hasn't stopped. He gave me my life. And for that, I just feel immensely grateful.
Okay. So the last question is, you lived the Osho experiment. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today?
Keep going. I think the place where I am in my life at the moment is that I find myself, I don't know. this is something that resonates, I don't know, something of thy will be done, something like that. That's where I am. It's like I feel him inside me. I feel him around me. I listen to him. It's not that anything has changed. He's in my heart, and that sort of kicks me, keeps me moving. And it's thy will be done, just trying to living whatever it is that wants to live through me with my family and with the work. I don't know how to answer that. It's so big, you know, just the immensity of him. I feel it and I'm speechless. You know, I just feel tremendously, but I can't give it words. I just feel tremendously grateful still. I think I always will do. His presence is a great reminder in this COVID situation that it's this too shall pass. It's just, you know, life, and don't get serious about it. And I mean, he's just there inside me, and I carry that, or it carries me. When I took sannyas, somehow I gave my heart to him. I think that's what happened. I gave my heart to him, and it's still there in that way. So he's still very much there for me. And yeah, I'm just responding to what, you know, there's something inside me that just wants to bless the world or just share. And yeah.
Anugyan, thank you so much. I know it's hard to put into words the vastity of Osho, but you did a great job, and I really thank you for that. And I feel more than I hear the words, and there is so much of Osho oozing out of you. So I want to thank you for sharing this with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Lots of love. It's been great connecting with you. I send you a big hug. And thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye now.
Ciao. Huh?
Ciao.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.